CKET is having a funding drive because we need your money desperately. You can pledge online at cket.ca or you can call the station at 514 907 9424.
On CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on www.cqut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune in to the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, or on the second Thursday of every month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio or finding help searching for past programs, email prison@cqut.ca.
Part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had. Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
I am not a number. I am a free man.
You were a number. You weren't a name. You want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
Oh, the law. The law. When they hang my husband, is that just?
You're listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name's Noah, and Candace and I will be your hosts for today's show. Right now, there's a funding drive going on at CKUT, and this year marks 30 years for CKUT, so we're asking folks who are able to do so to help support the station by donating as part of the funding drive. The funding drive is CKUT's most important fundraising event of the year. For 10 days, we ask listeners and programmers to show their support and commitment for our station and for independent campus and community broadcasting in Montreal. During the funding drive, CKUT features special programming, events, and remote broadcasts with loads of guests, artists, organizers, and community members from Montreal and beyond. CKUT's content is neither controlled nor influenced by corporate or government interest. Rather, CKUT's programming is determined by its listeners and the members of its communities. Creating diverse grassroots and accessible media is especially important in the current landscape of mainstream media, where the majority of media outlets are controlled by a small number of corporations. Independent media outlets such as CKUT ensure a diversity of information and voices. Donations help keep the station going, funding everything from the broadcast tower and transmitter that takes us from this studio into your radios, to gear like recorders that staff and volunteers can use to produce the content you hear on CKUT, to stuff like toilet paper at the station, which is less high-tech but equally as important. You can donate during our show, and if you donate over $30, you can pick from a list of books that we're giving away as prizes. Those books include Jailbreak Out of History by Butch Lee, Raising the Civil Dead, Prisoners and Community Radio by Heather Anderson, Instead of Prison, Prison Research Education Action Project, and Condemned by Keith Lamar. If you want to donate, you can do so by phone at 514-907-9424. During the funding drive, we'll give you the other phone number later. You can do it online at ckut.ca/donate, by mail at Radio CKUT 3647 University Street, Montreal, postal code H3A2B3, or in person at the station during office hours. We also have copies of the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar available as prizes, and we'll be hearing from a member of the Certain Days Collective in just a few minutes. First, however, as we often do, we will start the show with some news.
According to data obtained by Reuters, Black people in Ontario spend longer in pretrial detention for comparable crimes than white people. The figures are for the last 5 years and show that Black people are also more likely than whites to spend over a year in pretrial detention, which likely means that they were denied bail altogether. Other studies have forever shown that Black people as well as Indigenous people are consistently given the harshest treatment from the Canadian justice system. From the way the streets are policed, to sentences, to treatment, to inside prison, to the conditions of release. American abolitionist Mariam Makeba, however, had this to say about studies and data concerning discrimination in the justice system. Do people know that there's research suggesting the highlighting racial disparities in CJ that makes white people even more punitive? I'm a data person, but this idea that data regarding racial disparities will impact white people to want to end those disparities is not empirical. Telling white people that Black people are more likely to be executed than whites makes white people more likely to support death penalty.
A vigil was held on October 12th outside Winnipeg's Remand Center to mark 1 year since the death of 31-year-old Indigenous father of two, Russell Spence. In the year since his death, the province of Manitoba, who run the jail, have not come forward with any details into the circumstances of his death. The Internal Investigations Unit, the supposedly civilian oversight body which is in charge of investigations surrounding deaths in custody in the province, has not released any information since their original press release, which claimed that he died after a quote-unquote confrontation with police and correction staff during processing. Russell's family was joined outside the jail by members of the American Indian Movement, as well as family and supporters of Errol Green, who died there just a few months before Russell. A grassroots movement led to an upcoming inquest into the death of Errol, whereas the lack of one around Russell's death has so far led to his case being ignored completely by the province. Russell's mother, Josephine Spence, had this to say, "I am mad today. I need some answers. It's been 1 year already. He didn't deserve that."
Take a production team impassioned by their story subject, a team ready to film under any circumstances and catapult them far away into deep Siberia, inside a gulag built by Stalin to extract mineral resources. The result will give you an exceptional documentary that shines a minute and tender light on a forgotten city where deep secrets are hidden by history. A Moon of Nickel and Ice, starting October 27th at Cinéma du Parc.
Now Next up, we'll be talking to Helen, who's a member of the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners Calendar Collective. Hi, Helen.
Hi, Noah.
So thanks for coming into studio. Can you introduce yourself and maybe give a bit of background about the Certain Days calendar?
Sure. So my name is Helen, and like you mentioned, I'm part of the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners Calendar Collective, as its full name is known. We are a collective of folks outside prison who work together with three political prisoners who are held in New York State to produce an annual wall calendar, which is both a fundraiser and an awareness raising project around prisoner justice issues, issues of political imprisonment, but also making the links to various other social justice issues. Each year we have a theme that we focus on to try and tie in prisoner justice and political prisoner issues with the given theme of that year.
So the theme for this year's calendar is Awakening Resistance. Can you talk a bit about that theme, how it was chosen, and maybe anything else you want to say about it?
Sure. Well, the background to how we choose any theme is the ideas generally come from our three prisoner members, who I guess I should introduce to your listeners. Robert Seth Hayes, who is a former member of the Black Panther Party. Herman Bell, also formerly of the Black Panther Party, and David Gilbert, who's a white anti-imperialist imprisoned for actions that were being carried out in solidarity with the Black Liberation Army. So they're all long-term political prisoners. They've all been in for approximately as long as I've been alive, which is around 40 years. So they generally come up with a theme that they then ask us to develop and solicit contributions for articles and art. And this year, when we were coming up with a theme, was also when Trump was in the process of being elected in the U.S., where all of our three prisoner members are held. So as we developed the theme further, Trump was inaugurated into office, and immediately, if people remember back to that time, the onslaught just started, right, with like attacks on people's rights, emboldened far-right fascist movement, white supremacist movement, and the impacts were felt obviously in the U.S. where Trump is still in office, but also here within the Canadian state with things like the mosque shooting in Quebec City, the flood of migrants that has fled Trump to seek something less dangerous here, or what you know, less immediately and obviously dangerous, but sometimes taking great risk. If people remember back to the winter, people crossing the border on foot, losing parts of their body to frostbite in the process. And so as our theme, we've chosen both, you know, that change in the political landscape that's occurred with Trump being in office south of the border, but also the resistance, the awakening resistance, the title of our theme, but the resistance that's rising up against that.
Beyond the overall theme, or I guess maybe like in connection to it, are there any topics or issues in specific that the calendar collective or the inside collective members tried to highlight in the calendar for this year?
Well, I named some of them in passing already, migrant justice, Islamophobia. But also whenever we talk about migrant justice and, you know, Trump's election promise to build a border wall, the travel ban, all those kinds of things, then we also have to talk about Indigenous issues as well, and, you know, whose land it is to be building borders on in the first place. So those are issues that come up in the calendar, both in terms of there's a piece written by Indigenous folks against the border wall, basically. And migrant justice is highlighted, but also we felt it important when talking about the new emboldened white supremacist movement, as the calendar does, both in terms of art and an article also, we felt it was important to also talk about anti-Semitism at the same time. And so there's also an article about anti-Semitism as it plays out on the radical left, just because we felt now more than ever that's an important piece. You know, it's always been important, but as there's sort of a new interest, a new sitting up and taking notice in radical left circles about the far right, about white supremacists, it's important to understand how anti-Semitism focuses within that ideology, as well as in a broader society, and then how that seeps into and plays out in our own organizing.
The calendar has a number of different features beyond just, you know, being a calendar with articles and artwork that are included every year. Like there's updates about a number of different political prisoners regarding if they've been released, changes in their case, as well as deaths. And there's also things like book recommendations and a sort of list of definitions for terms like political prisoner. Can you talk a bit about any or all of those features and why the collective has chosen to make those things part of the Certain Days calendar?
Sure. Those features have all developed over time. The calendar has been going for close to 2 decades now. And if you look back, they sort of like started out in a rudimentary form. We used to have like a little text box of 5 or 6 books we recommend, and now it's a whole page of books with a short list of websites included as well. We want the calendar to be an organizing tool and an educational tool. It does raise funds, and that is a day-to-day focus. When once the calendar is produced, we try and sell it and raise money for the things that we're raising money for. But once it's in people's hands, we don't want the process to stop there. We want people to learn from it, both folks that are already convinced that prisoner justice is an important thing, but also people that are maybe picking up the calendar in a bookstore or looking at it on a friend's wall and have not thought about these issues at all. So in terms of the resource list, we want folks to be able to, turn somewhere for further information that's, more text than we can possibly hope to provide in the calendar. We want folks in prison too who are reading the calendar to, know what is out there in terms of books that they can maybe ask folks to send in to them. Our list of websites is limited for that reason. Folks that have access to the internet can check our website for a longer list of websites. The definitions are, our thoughts, our perspective. They're not something that's necessarily cast in stone, but we want the discussion to be ongoing. Like, we want to put our contribution to the discussion out there of what is a political prisoner, who is overrepresented in prison, what is a prisoner of war, all of these types of terms. And these are debates that happen in the prisoner justice movement, but again, as folks, maybe coming to these issues for the first time in the calendar, we want them to have a starting point. In terms of the updates, our production cycle is like a year. The 2018 calendar is out now, available for purchase. The year 2018 hasn't started yet, but already we're actually starting to think about the 2019 calendar. So by the time someone gets released, has a change in health status, is denied parole, is granted parole, any of these things that can be an update in their case, it's important to do the follow-up, we feel, to just kind of to as much as possible in a static document like a calendar, have it be like an ongoing source of information in that way.
And you mentioned that the calendar serves as a fundraiser. Can you maybe say a bit about where the funds go to?
We have a long-standing tradition of giving to two groups in particular, and generally we try to fundraise for third. This year we're trying something a little different where we don't name the third group up front, but we're dividing our proceeds into sort of three pots, as it were, three thirds. And the third is the unnamed third, is for ongoing initiatives that, again, because the calendar comes out almost a year ahead of when we're going to be giving the money out, new campaigns arise, often sort of urgent, especially with prisoners often being attacked or having to face legal challenges from within the prison. There's often a need to be responsive, so we're trying that for the first time. The other two-thirds I can speak to, though. One is Adamir, which is a group based in the Palestinian territory, which works with prisoners in Palestine, Palestinian prisoners in both Palestinian Authority and Israeli prisons, to provide direct support to them and their families. They were instrumental during the hunger strike last April, so people might know their work from there. And then the other group that we give to on an ongoing basis is a group based in New York State called RAP, which stands for Release Aging People from Prison. And like the name implies, it campaigns to have older people released from prison, either through policy change and also through parole as well, just based on like the age, ailing health, and long-term prison sentences that older folks in prison have usually already served by that point.
Can you explain a little bit about how the submissions process works, or sort of how the calendar comes to be what it is every year, and who are the people that contribute it? You already mentioned the sort of the three inside contributors that have been part of the calendar from the beginning, but if you want to explain a bit more about how the other submissions work, and if there's any contributions or contributors that you want to mention specifically for this year.
Sure. So, like I said, we pick out a theme pretty early on. We discuss it with our prison collective members, and they usually give us a bunch of ideas to run with, like, hey, you should contact this person, or hey, I read this great article by so-and-so, or saw this great piece of art, you should get in touch with them. Then we put out a wide call for submissions over the internet or through any other channels we can think of, and we also mail that call for submissions physically to all the political prisoners that are held within the U.S. through the various networks that exist to support them. So then we got to make 12 decisions, well, 24 decisions, 12 pieces of art and 12 articles. In addition, on the actual calendar pages, we have little text boxes, like room for short blurbs. So we have a tiny bit of wiggle room to include other things. So in terms of highlighting stuff, geez, I don't really know where to start. I would want to highlight it all. But maybe I'll mention the Montreal contributors, since we're on a Montreal show. We have an art piece by the artist Zola, which I'm very happy about. It's one of my personal favorites. We also have an article that's written by the Arlene Cologne Support Committee about Arlene's case, her class action lawsuit that she's undertaking against Correctional Service of Canada for on behalf of people who have spent time in isolation trying to seek compensation for that. So that's another Montreal contribution. Like I said earlier, we tried to cover a broad range of topics in terms of the awakening resistance. We have pieces from political prisoners like Marius Mason and Chinatli, who's formerly known as Alvaro Luna Hernandez. We have pieces from two of our inside editors, Herman Bell and David Gilbert. People can find the full list on our website at certaindays.org.
So you did an interview similar to this one last year, actually on our Funding Drive show as well, and there's a question that you answered that I thought was interesting, so I wanted to ask it again, if that's okay. I wanted to ask if you could explain a little bit about the decision to produce a yearly calendar, so one that changes every year, the dates for each month are written in, rather than what's sometimes known as a perpetual calendar, which is where you have the months, but not necessarily with the dates written in, and sometimes used by folks on the inside, since they maybe don't have an opportunity to access a new calendar every year. Also, sometimes calendars are things that are banned in prisons and jails.
Mm-hmm. You know, to be honest with you, I don't remember what I said last year, so I'm curious if my answer this year is going to be totally different or somewhat similar to last year's. But like you mentioned, perpetual calendars, you can reuse them, so there's not sort of the outlay of resources for folks in prison or elsewhere. But that being said, things change from year to year. I mean, to be honest, part of it for us is the opportunity to reach out every year with new information around a new theme. But there's also things that change in terms of a calendar, movable holidays, which directly affect folks' lives both inside and outside of prisons in terms of, say, visiting hours being different on a statutory holiday. So something like Easter that's, you know, not the same every year, being able to note that each year. The other thing that we haven't talked about so far this interview is on the actual calendar pages, we include holidays, other commemorations like that, but we also include things that we feel are important to commemorate, so dates in movement history, days that, you know, prison strikes occurred, days of large or significant protests, days of mourning where, you know, people have been killed or, you know, massacres have occurred, these types of things as well. So we add to that every year as well. So that's another reason to continue to produce a new calendar every year. But certainly just the practicality in terms of movable holidays would be a significant one.
If people want a copy of the calendar, how can they go about getting one?
For anyone who has access to the internet, the easiest way to order one is by visiting our website, certaindays, all one word, .org. There's also a number of stores around Montreal, stores and spaces where it is available. geez, am I going to be able to say a complete list? I don't want to forget anybody. L'Insoumise Anarchist Bookstore, Rue Lyon Feminist Bookstore has them. Le Frigo Vert Health Food Co-op at Concordia, as well as the Concordia Community Co-op Bookstore. Cooperg Concordia, also if you're around the Concordia campus, as you'll notice, there's a number of places you can procure one. A complete list is available on our website, because even as I say this, I'm realizing that I'm almost certainly forgetting a store since I didn't bring that list with me. I'm going to give the mailing address where people can order one by writing to us directly. If you're going to send a check or money order, please notice that it should not be made out to certain days, but rather to Cooperg Concordia. So Q-P-I-R-G-C-O-N-C-O-R-D-I-A, Cooperg Concordia. And then the mailing address is certain days, care of Cooperg Concordia, 1455 de Maisonneuve Boulevard West. So that's D-E space M-A-I-S-O-N-N-E-U-V-E Boulevard West, Montreal, Quebec, postal code H3G as in George, 1M as in Mary, 8. So folks can order there. The calendar just cost $15 plus postage for non-prisoners. But for prisoners, it's $8 postage included. So whether a prisoner is ordering one themselves or whether somebody's ordering one to, you know, give or send into a prisoner, please note that you're eligible for the prisoner price in that case. The other way that people can procure a calendar is by donating to Prison Radio on CKUT, because we are, as Noah mentioned in the Funding Drive show, and certain days is donating some copies of the calendar. So if people call in and make a pledge, then you could get a calendar as well.
Thank you so much for coming into the studio today. Is there anything else you want to add?
I just want to personally encourage people to pledge to CKUT, as I am about to do myself by pledging $30, because of the important voice that Prison Radio has provided over the years. It's one of the ways that I first heard about prison justice issues. It's been going for a long, long time, and it really, I feel like, keeps folks on the outside and folks on the inside connected and politicized around prison. And as long as CKUT is here, Prison Radio can be here. And so send us your money.
Thanks so much, Helen.
Your eyes no more. Yeah. tryst of the chaperone sage. Well, desperate times call for desperate men. I'm just a kid, but I'll pretend my time will come, but until then, son, don't you rise no more. I see the gallows altar that circle round the sun. They're gonna hang me if I stay here, and they'll shoot me if I run. Watch his pride, or on my wrist these shackles slide. Hear my restless 45, so don't you rise no more. Good night, my Andalusia. Don't buy all the lies that they feed you. And though you're heading slowly to some place I can't respect, I'll keep you in my collection of regrets. Down the highway, down the road, it's in for me, all right. I'll take my body on the run with a trail of death behind me and Delavina at my side. Two silhouettes against the sun. Well, I spent last night in Las Cruces jail, rain and hail, born to fail. Nobody come on, I go my bail, so don't you rise no more.
That was the song Las Cruces Jail by Two Gallants, and the time is presently 11:36, and you are listening to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and www.ckut.ca.
Next on the show, we are going to hear a continuation of the interview that the Prison Radio Show conducted with two members of Project Salaam. And the Project Salaam is a group based in Albany, New York. It stands for Support and Legal Advocacy for Muslims. So we spoke with Lynn Jackson and Jean Finley about the cases of Yasin Arif and Mohammed Hussein, two men who were entrapped by the FBI and arrested in 2004 as terrorists. And in this part of the interview, we hear about communication management units, the lawsuit challenging the existence of these types of prisons. And we also hear a bit about the shifting definitions of terrorism. So stay tuned here to the Prison Radio Show on CKUT, the Funding Drive edition.
This case of Yasin Arif and Mohammed Hussein is so outrageous, and it goes against all the principles of the United States. It's horrific. And then there's one other thing I'd like to mention with this, is that the judge in the case said that both men should be sent to prisons within 500 miles of Albany so that they could visit, their families could visit them. But Yasin was sent to a special Muslim prison. So because this is prison radio, people really need to know about this. The United States, I'm so embarrassed to be an American and talk about this, but it's just true. They built constructed two prisons, very, very, very restrictive prisons. One is in Terre Haute, Indiana. One is in Marion, Illinois. And these prisons are called Communication Management Units, or CMUs. And these prisons are primarily that most of the people in the prisons are Muslims. Now, we have met some people who have been released from these horrific federal prisons. I've met one man who was an animal rights activist and one man who was an environmental activist, and they were considered terrorists for their environmental and animal rights activities. And
not Muslims.
And not Muslims, not Muslims. And they said that the guards told them that they were balancers, meaning that because the prison was almost completely Muslim, that they had to have somebody in there who wasn't a Muslim to show that they weren't being racist about having the Muslims all in one prison. But these are horrific prisons. When I first got involved in this case, Yassine was allowed to make one 15-minute phone call per week between the hours of 8 and 3 o'clock p.m., I believe. That would be Indiana time, Monday through Friday. So how on earth could he talk to his children who would be in school at that time? How could he have any kind of relationship with his children to only be able to call between those hours? It was so outrageous. That plus he was only allowed very short visits from his family through glass, so he couldn't actually, you know, hold his baby on his lap or sit next to his wife. He had to talk through a plexiglass window with a handset. And if that wasn't outrageous, I'm not too sure what was. He was in a CMU. He was in one CMU for 2 years, another CMU for the other 2 years. So in total, about 4 years, he was in a CMU. He eventually, with other people, with the help of the Center for Constitutional Rights, filed a lawsuit about the incredible restrictions of the CMU, plus how there was no way to get out of a CMU. Like the question was, well, why was he there to begin with? You know, clear. Well, we of course know that he's innocent, but beyond that, why would you put him in this severely restrictive prison? And basically, it looks like the prison used a statement made by the informant to put Yassine in the prison. When the informant asked Yassine, well, what do you think of JEM? And I think it was JEM, which is a terrorist group in Kashmir, I think, any rate. And Yassine said, I don't know anything about them except what I see on the TV. He said, if you want to support people, you should support the widows and the children. You know, that's, you know, you should only support, you know, peaceful type things. And it was because of that statement, because Yassine said you should, you know, take care of the widows and the children, that he got stuck in the CMU. There may be other reasons that we don't know about. But these prisons still exist in the United States, which is so outrageous, it's very hard to talk about. Oh, also the prisoners there call these CMUs little Gitmos because they are so restrictive.
That lawsuit, by the way, even though some of the plaintiffs, which were other prisoners, have dropped off the suit one by one, mainly because they were released. So the complaint about prison conditions was moot, not because they didn't support it, they did, but they could not any longer remain part of it because they were released and therefore they had no standing to be part of it. The suit is still called a REF v. Holder. That was Eric Holder, the Attorney General at the time that the suit came about. It is still going. It's been in the courts now, I think, for 3 or 4 years. Things have changed around a little bit. There have been some decisions whereby a judge will strike down one part of the suit. In other words, this section, no, I don't think that's true, but leaves alone the rest of it. So there is still one main section going, which is challenging basically the existence of these prisons, which were generated directly after 9/11, intended clearly for Muslims, because, after all, who did 9/11? With no public input, no notice whatsoever. Now, these are our tax dollars at work. So there were many aspects of the formation and existence of these prisons that was flat out illegal, and that's what the suit addresses. We think that because Yassin is scheduled to get out, knock wood, next year in October, he has one more year to go, that with himself, the main lead plaintiff, perhaps the suit will migrate or mutate or something else. He will no longer be in prison, and so not clear. But the Center for Constitutional Rights is still going forward with it because they are the main supporters of it, although there are many, many other organizations that support it as well. So all of these things that we've talked about, the existence of the CMUs, the use of stings for the government to engineer a fake plot and then for a jury to convict on the government's engineering of a fake plot, which is the definition of preemptive prosecution, the fact that these are 98% Muslims is no accident. All of these things really came about after 9/11 as a result of a complete different way to approach for law enforcement and the Justice Department and the government to approach the issue of terrorism. What seems to be happening now, and we've talked about this among ourselves, is that, of course, the model of terrorism has changed. We always say in response to people, well, how can you be supporting a terrorist? And we say, we know this case up and down and back and forth and inside and out, and if for 1 minute we thought that either of these men were terrorists, do you think we would support them? No. I think we're able to tell who the terrorists are and who the terrorists aren't. And if you look at the news over the past several years, the model has changed. It is not, you know, some group sends someone here to do damage. None of these cases that we've looked at have been sponsored by any group whatsoever because there was no terrorism activity that took place. The terrorist events that we do know about, the attempted Times Square car bombing, the shooting at Fort Hood, those were individuals acting alone without any impetus or money or pushback from any other group, radicalized with an ideology that made sense to them but not to the people who were the victims. And more clearly, it's the FBI itself has referred to this, it's the lone wolf that they are most concerned about. Not the man with a family with children. Not the guy who's the student here somewhere. It is one lone wolf, not necessarily Muslim, and I think finally the government is getting out of the idea that it's just Muslims who are responsible for terror attacks. I think looking at the past couple of weeks in our country, we can call mass shootings terror attacks. And they don't seem to be focusing anymore on the incredible expense and outlay of time and effort and research necessary to construct one of these cases. The Aref Hossein case cost well over $1 million. That doesn't include any of the staff time or paying the witnesses or anything. It does include how much the informant was paid. They can't afford it anymore, and that's not where the problem is. And I think ultimately events in this country have taken over so that that model of the radicalized guy coming over from wherever to kill Americans because of, you know, the radical Muslim ideology, the subtext of which is he has to be guilty because he's Muslim, because all Muslims are potential terrorists as by dint of their religion, because we all know that Islam is a terrorist religion, and I'm putting that in quotes. Think about it. That's the assumption. doesn't work anymore. And I think law enforcement, to their credit, has begun to see that. It doesn't mean that they've stopped prosecuting Muslims. It means that they're taking a harder look at the real evidence, that they didn't expect the pushback, I think, from the general American community that says, this is bogue, this is wrong. Maybe we had a tiny part in that, at least we did in Albany, New York, by keeping this case alive. And every year we do a commemoration here in Albany of the anniversary of the arrests of Aref and Hossein. And every year, and it's been how many years now, Lynn?
I think we started in 2007. So this year was our 10th observation of the arrests of...
And that was part of an interview with Lynn Jackson and Jean Finley, two members of Project Salaam, a support and legal advocacy group for Muslims based in Albany, New York. We're going to hear more about the cases of Yasin Arif and Mohammed Hussein in upcoming episodes of the Prison Radio Show. For more information about the group, projectsalaam.org is their website to visit.
Yo, you gotta make sure, man, you know what I'm saying, we break it down for everybody, you know what I'm saying, give them something to take home and digest,
in
you know,
jail,
everything, you know what I'm saying,
in jail,
you know, something we can teach the youth, you know what I'm saying, stem in the right direction,
the bell, in jail,
you know what I'm saying, we ain't trying to be no role models,
in jail,
or nothing like that,
without the bell,
in jail,
without the
just
bell,
life,
in
you know what I'm saying, represent us,
I got confined at 17, young and naive, cast into a world with killers, robbers, and thieves. Cramped in an eight-man cell with 10 cats. 8 on the bunks and 3 on just mats. Housed and matched with cats facing all day. Habitual way, short the long-term stays. Going back and forth the circuit. My life hanging on a verdict. And laws I'm unable to interpret. I just knew I had to do some time. Bottom line laid up. Some years or so away from my lock. From the sun, moon, and sky. Lack of fresh air had me feeling pale and dry. Circles forming under my eyes from sleepless weeks. Stress levels off the hook. Reaching a new peak, homesick for my peoples in the streets. A huge weight bearing on my back. I'm chain smoking roll-ups in attempts to counteract. And ride my rack was no getaway. Cause life goes on and tomorrow's just another day of the same routine. Ain't a damn thing new. Either I grind, watch a tube at the phone to get a view. So much time, it's a little to do. Just waiting on the court day so I can get through. Caught between a rock and a hard place. Prosecution had a hard case. So I'd have to plead or escape if I took it to trial. It would've gave me a boat. Fresh 25 piece like a noose with a rope. I couldn't go that route, no doubt. So I waited for the best offer. And then I copped the hell out after getting sentenced. I was eager to ride, just to be outside, just to see the sky. No more bars, no more court. Held the county, made the joint sound like a resort. I was all in for it. Had my shit packed and wrecked. Ready to jet, standing at the bars, anxious, waiting on the
depth. On the depth.
Without the bell,
in jail.
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 Without the in jail.
You know what I'm saying? You got these whack MCs out here, you know what I'm saying? They do 3 days in the county, you know what I'm saying? And come home and write a rhyme about doing bids.
Without the,
you know what I'm saying?
Bell,
shanking people.
Without the bell,
doing
in
time.
Jail.
I don't know nothing about time.
Without
man.
The
I got
bell,
in jail.
Without the bell,
we was handcuffed in the back of a bus. 40 of us, the road it was rough. Plus, nobody I could trust. Headed upstate, no chance for escape. Barbed wire and guards in the gun tower secured the gate. My uncle's fate was life without parole. Thank God I was blessed with an outdate. I can't wait, but I got to. You probably wouldn't have did what I did to catch a bid, but I'm not you. I got a crew still on the street. They don't write me letters. No time to visit a brother or bother to send me cheddar. Never did I sweat it. I know they got a life to live. My man Jay had a wife and kid, and these are the consequences my actions committed. Some cats that I used to visit
now I live with. Along with swillers, killers, drug dealers, some rich brothers, crackheads, con artists, child molesters, dick suckers, all types of individuals. Sort of like a melting pot for criminals. The system is designed to stock a plentiful. This old cat from the hood told me out of every bad situation comes some good. It's understood. Prison ain't good for my health. Looking in the mirror, introducing me to myself. I studied my thoughts, my ways, the routes I took. Though I read daily, it ain't all about the books. It's all about the lessons you learn through your experience, applying it in a positive way. Period. All praise due to Allah. I used to scheme till he showed me the straight way. Sirach the Musta King. Now I'm on the VI telling moms about Islam. She called me a blasphemous fool. I stayed calm. The world wasn't ready for the changes I made. They was waiting for the nigga I was in 12th grade. Every day, the same old thing. I walked the yard, set up in a child hall with Abdul Rahim. Cats waiting in infirmary lines for the medicines. Moorish Americans walking around with circle sevens and older heads playing horseshoes, sometimes chess. Tripping when I first seen a faggot with breasts in a shower with a cat getting hit from the back. White dudes on basketball courts kicking hacky sacks. Ball games, card games, face it. Everybody time on their hands, most of it wasted. Anything to make the time fly as soon as possible. Some cats used to sleep all day. That's unacceptable. Hands getting cracked over unpaid debts. Either a shank or a lock on the side would do the trick. Correction officers, devil's advocate. And when it's time to go home, parole boards wasn't having it. Life was hell every day, the devil's trying me. But I paid my debt to society. And after 27 months of my life, I tell you one thing. I know why the cage bird sings. In jail. Without the bell, in jail. Without the bell, in jail.
Everybody who know why
without the bell, in jail.
I know why the cage bird sings.
You know,
in jail.
In jail.
I know why the cage bird sings.
In jail.
I know why the cage bird sings.
In jail.
I sing the same song. When I was upstate, I couldn't fly wings.
That was the song I Know Why the Cage Bird Sings by Binary Star. And Binary Star is the group that formed in Hiawatha Correctional Facility, composed of One Below and Sanam Silla.
The time is currently 11:55, and you have been listening to the Funding Drive edition of the Prison Radio Show. If you wish to donate to keep CKUT and therefore our show going, we encourage you to do so. We have some books and calendars, including the Certain Days Freedom for Political Prisoners calendar, to give out as thank yous from the Prison Radio Show. And there are also a bunch of other gifts you can get. You can claim from CKUT as well. So you can donate by phone, 514-907-9424. That's 514-907-9424. You can also donate online at CKUT.ca/donate. You can mail a check to Radio CKUT 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H3A2B3, or you can drop by in person at the station during regular office hours, Monday to Friday, before 6 p.m. So thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on cable, and online at CKUT.ca. You can check out past episodes of the Prison Radio Show at prisonradioshow.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at Prison Radio Show. The Prison Radio Show airs twice a month on CKUT. We're on the air the second Thursday of the month at 5 p.m. and the fourth Friday at 11 a.m. And so our next show will air on Thursday, November 9th at 5 p.m. If you have any questions on anything you've heard on today's show regarding the calendar or Project Salaam or any of the news items, or you wish to be involved in the show, you can contact us. Our email address is prison@skut.ca. Formerly incarcerated people are certainly encouraged to participate. Folks can leave a message on our listener comment line at 514-448-4041, extension 2547. And that's 514-448-4041, extension 2547. If you are in prison, we encourage you to participate in the show in any way possible. And you can write to us at the address I already mentioned, The Prison Radio Show, care of CKUT, 3647 University Street, Montreal, Quebec, H 3A2B3. So again, thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Candace.
My name is Noah.
And we've been your hosts for today. Stay tuned.
Thank you.